One thing I've learned after all these years, you're gonna save yourself a whole lot of tears. Don't try to figure out who was wrong and who was right. Got to move along, baby. Let's ride. You got to roll with the punches. Yeah, you got to go with the flow.
Yeah, you're going to roll with the punches. Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan. Welcome back to Hibernian Radio. We're coming at you here from the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue. Yeah, thank you. And we're brought to you by Local 150, Sheehy Funeral Home, Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, Fox's Pizza, Flood Brothers, and Guinness. Guinness is good for you. All right, we have a great show tonight as we're heading into the St. Patrick's Day frivolity. Our guest is retired Chicago Police Department Deputy Chief Pat McNulty. Okay, Pat, welcome to the show. Now, I got to tell you, we've had a lot of guests on this show, but this is the first time that I've gotten a whole bunch of people making comments about our guests.
Don't hold that against
Jim me. Jack, you know who I'm talking about, Jim Jack Stavich. He's always riding his bike around Beverly with three other old guys. You know who I'm talking about? Joey G. Man says, good man. Skip O'Donnell, De La Salle man and teammate. Great guy. Tell him I said hello. Bob and Joan, who's in Florida, I think. Do you know Bob? A good man. Tell him Terry and Bob and Joan said hi. The best there was. Ask him if he remembers Chet Bolger, the football coach from D.
Certainly do.
He was akin to Joe Healy to work for and with. Danny Burke, who his father just died, Daniel Patrick Burke. Great guy. This will be fun. Danny Boyles is looking forward to it. Kevin Clancy, tell Pat I send my love and think of Uncle Pete often. Who's Uncle Pete?
It was my uncle.
Okay. That makes sense. Marty Quill, hi to Pat. He'll have some great stories. Donna O'Connor, he's one of the best. Bill Kushner says, one of the best. Green bottle. What's that mean? Oh, there's the green bottle right there. And, of course, Skinny Sheehan called me today. And, you know, he just went on and on and on about how great you are. He said, I've worked more events than Colonel Riley. But Pat McNulty was the best guy there ever was. Talking about you guys working the Democratic Convention and the demonstrators, like, screaming at you and you just smiling at them. Anyway, Skinny's a big fan, and he may be dropping by later. So welcome, Pat.
Thank you.
So glad to have you on the show. You've been retired 9 years. You grew up in St. Justin Martyr Parish. Went to De La Salle. Take it from there, pal. Tell me your story.
Nothing much to say.
He's got a 6-page resume here. Okay.
Yeah, I grew up at St. Justin's, and I got married early in life, and I was lucky enough.
Early in life, how old were you?
I was 20.
Oh, wow, that is early.
And I was lucky enough, I was able to take when I was 19, I took the test for the police department.
Yeah.
And I turned 21 in April of 70.
Yeah.
And 2 months later, I was in the police academy.
No kidding.
So I hit the street shortly after I was, 6 months later, I was hitting the street.
Yeah.
Went to the South Chicago district. I didn't even know that area of the city existed.
Where'd you? Oh, so you were from 72nd.
72nd and Honoree, I grew up at.
Yeah.
And then we lived in St. Justin's for 4 years.
Yeah.
And then after that, we moved over to St. Adrian's.
Oh,
69th. I was like being in the military, being in Lithuania for a while. It was,
oh, that's Marquette Park. Yeah.
Yes, Marquette's Parkus. It was great.
Yeah.
And then we bought our first house at 76th and Campbell, which was next to Quigley South at the time.
Yeah.
And now it's St. Rita.
Sure, yeah.
And we lived there for 13 years. And then we moved to 83rd in California. We lived there for 16 years. And now we've been at Beverly here for the last 12 years.
Oh, good for you. And so you took through the whole history of Chicago starting in 1970. Skinny mentioned the Democratic Convention, but you just missed in 68 that convention.
I happened to be there with my sister Mary Ann and myself. We went down to There was a program at the Auditorium Theater.
Yeah.
And I think the Fifth Dimension and somebody else were there.
Yeah.
So we went to that and we came out. And, of course, you were at Congress at Michigan Avenue. And
yeah.
we walked down the street towards Balboa.
Where the statue was and everything.
Well, the statue was at 9th of Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the night that they had the, that you saw on television that forever described the Chicago Police Department when they were fighting the people who wanted to go into the loop. But they kept them back.
The whole world was watching.
The whole world was watching.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So that was in 1968. So I was down there then, but I wasn't really part of the problem.
Not yet.
Well, that wasn't part of the solution yet either.
Yeah, that's
so,
good.
So
yeah.
That was then. And then, but.
So you were a cop for some of the tumultuous times of history. Yeah.
But I always said it was... 39 years of chasing bad guys and helping good people.
That's good.
It's a wonderful. Father Tom Nagel, he was our chaplain for a long time.
Yeah.
He said, if you believe you're doing God's work, there's no better job in North America.
Yeah.
He says, but if you're in it for the paycheck, it's a horrible way to make a paycheck.
Yes. Yeah.
But I always thought it was part of doing God's work and, enjoyed it.
It's a good way of looking at it. Yeah.
Well, the old days, I used to look at it like when you're a little kid and you're at a party with all your cousins and your redheaded cousin gets a bigger piece of the pretzel stick than you. And so what they do is, well, that's not fair. So they call the police and the police come and they break the pretzel so everybody gets the even amount and then we leave.
Yeah.
Well, you cut too many people out of the possibility of making money, so as a consequence, they don't like you to make things fair anymore.
Tell me about it.
You have to go to court with them and, include the attorneys and everything else.
Oh, it's terrible now. You've watched the whole thing change around. You're from the good old days, man. You started out as a patrolman, and then you became a sergeant, then a lieutenant. And you, deputy chief is like number two in command of the whole police department, isn't
well,
it?
Well, no, that would be a deputy superintendent. Deputy chief, at that time, the way the department was organized, there were five different areas, each one incorporated five districts. So I was deputy chief of the West Side Area 4, which included downtown and going out west.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so that was that. And then after that, I became an assistant deputy superintendent, which is... They called him a street deputy, and you're out there on midnights, my favorite shift, and we would respond to any major incidents, and primarily police discharge incidents.
What's that mean?
Well, when an officer would fire his weapon.
Oh, okay, yeah.
So you'd have to go and prepare a report, and you wouldn't get to go home until you finished your report.
Oh, no.
So sometimes, so you were working a 10 or 12-hour day anyway, and sometimes they equaled 15, 20 hours, something like that. So
And you also are one of the founding members of the Emerald Society?
I was the Emerald Society indeed. Myself and my brother, we went down to, used to be at St. Jude's Hall on Madison Street.
Okay.
And then in 1982, they put a notice in the Daily Bulletin that there was going to be starting a pipe band.
Oh, yeah.
Because up until that time, they were bringing New York.
Yeah, that's Danny Burke who just died.
Just passed away.
Yeah, yeah.
He got a donation from
Jane Byrne.
Jane Byrne.
Yeah.
About $5,000. He started the band up, and we started from there. And it all won't last, but they're still going strong.
They are.
They're still going strong.
They're having their St. Patrick's Day party Saturday.
And I sort of fell away from the band after I became a commander because I was, when you were downtown, you have a lot of details and a lot of events on the weekend. So one of the times, it was about 6 weeks without a day off.
Oh, wow.
And I come home and I grab my pipe case on a Saturday night. And my wife says, where are you going? I said, well, we got a wedding tonight. And she says, I haven't had dinner out in 6 weeks. I haven't seen a movie in even longer.
Yeah.
So, yes, dear.
Okay.
So it was...
put it away for a while.
Yeah. So, sort of from there on.
Yeah.
And... demands your time.
Oh, yeah, sure.
They know what they're doing when they make you an exempt member because...
Is that what you are?
An exempt member? That's what they call anybody who's above a captain.
Oh, okay.
They're appointed and they're exempt from the, it used to be the Civil Service Association, you know.
Oh, okay.
And they would, if they had to pay you overtime, you'd make a lot more money.
Oh, sure.
So, yeah. With all the hours you put in.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, I enjoyed it. It was good, and the people were wonderful.
Yes.
I mean, I became a commander of the 1st District in March.
Where's the 1st District?
The 1st District is downtown. It's the central business district.
Oh, yeah.
At that time, when I became commander, it went from, of course, the lake over to the Kennedy-Dan Ryan Expressway.
Yeah.
And from the Chicago River on the north to 15th Street. There's a Midway airline there, which is the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
So that was our district at the time. And
And that was your beat. You were the commander of that whole thing. Wow.
Man, I loved it. Yeah. It was a great time. I was promoted on the 15th of March, 1996. It was a Friday. And I was put in the deep end of the pool because the next day was the downtown St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Yeah.
And so I saw Matt Rodriguez there. He was the superintendent at the time. And I said, this is the first parade I'm at in 13 years with pants on. Because up until that time, I was the Emerald Society wearing a kilt.
Yeah.
So that was, and he just sort of, what did I do? started questioning around. But I felt a lot like Ensign Wilson did in Star Trek. You know Ensign Wilson?
No.
He's the one that beams down with Captain Kirk and Dr. McCoy, but he won't be on next week's episode if things go bad.
Oh, yeah.
So I thought, well, that was going to be the situation with me if things go bad, because I was right. Of course, we were expecting the Democratic Convention that August.
Yeah.
And so I remember, because I was young enough at the time, but remember the 68, the last time we had the Democratic Convention. And so I knew that they had a beautiful picture of a bunch of knuckleheads on the General Logan statue down at 9th of Michigan with the Viet Cong flag.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, a lot of these people are going to be coming back to, because they want their picture taken there like their father was there in 68.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I tried to think about it, and I was thinking with the tactical lieutenant at the time, Dan Dugan, and the foot lieutenant, Tom Rennie. And we got together on one evening about a week before the convention, and somehow that statue got greased.
Really? That's great. Yeah.
Well, what happened was that about during the convention, we saw a guy come up with a bucket and a big, big toothbrush and a bucket of water. And we went up to him. Well, first we had seen him do it. He tried climbing it.
Oh,
and he couldn't get up.
Yeah.
So that's when he forced him to come with the bucket, because he was going to do a big act of cleaning it up.
Yeah.
So we went up and said, oh, you can't do that. Well, what happened? What's on there? Well, we don't know what's going on. You know, you can't touch this. I said, we got to call the curator of outdoor
statues
here for the park district. I said, you can't do this. It's a shame it's happened, you know, whatnot. But that was Andrew Hoffman, Abby Hoffman's son.
Wow.
So, you know, so
he wanted to recreate.
He wanted to get a photograph, photo op, you know, up there. Yeah. And,
that was genius. What kind of grease did you put on there?
It was just axle grease.
All over.
One of the guys knew a Nissan dealer.
Yeah.
So he got some good axle grease. And it blended right in with the bronze.
Yes.
You couldn't tell. And Kevin actually had, Kevin Ryan, who was a subsequent district commander there, he had to do it also.
He did it for
a couple other times. So something that sort of happened.
That's great. But,
So it's just, you know, you got to think ahead.
Yes, yeah. Was there a lot of action at that convention?
It wasn't bad at all compared to 68. You know, we weren't no longer in the Vietnam War.
Oh, yeah.
So,
but Skinny today was describing all these demonstrators and you just smiling at them kind of.
You know, yeah. They used to get angry with me because I would lead them down the parade like it was my idea. You know, I would get in front of them. And a couple times I go up to them and I say, you know, there's a better photo opportunity over here, because they would march to the Metropolitan Correctional Facility. I says, get around the corner and you want that Metropolitan Correctional Facility in the background.
Yeah.
And I says, that'll
where you guys are going to wind up.
That'll look better, you know.
Yeah.
So after a while, they realized that I was, you get to appreciate the First Amendment when you're the commander of the First District.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not always angry with these people, but they do have a right to petition their government. And The first year I was down there also was, we had a problem with, there were two police shootings on the same weekend. And it might have been a second year. But that initiated a number of protests at the mayor's office at City Hall.
Yeah.
And every day at noontime they would show up and they would bang, you know, outside chant and whatnot.
Yeah.
But we made it through that. We just, you know, just smile at them. And it makes them angry to no end.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I learned early on that if you just wait long enough, you can actually touch their humanity.
So, good for you.
You know, yeah. And you don't want to just start being a fighter all the time.
You know what? Now, you worked for 39 years, and a lot of it as a commander. Well, are there seasons that it's worse, or, you know, or the full moon? What's about the story about are full moons real when people go wacko on full moons?
Well, you'd have to ask an emergency room nun.
Oh, yeah.
Nurse that, yeah. You know.
Or a nun.
Yeah, or a nun. But, you know, it seems that way, but, you know,
yeah.
It just could be because you're expecting more of it.
Sure.
You know, you're expecting it to be this way.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily so.
First district commander, you had to, I would imagine, have a lot of interesting encounters with people throughout the years.
One of the surprising things is to see the civic-mindedness of people that are just, that work in the loop, that have businesses in the loop, that represent different associations in the loop, whether it be the LaSalle Street Group, State Street Group, different things like that.
Yeah.
And they're always just amazing people that just give of their own time, you know, just to ensure the quality of life in Chicago went on. It's a shame that we've lost a lot of corporate clout in the years past. You know, we lost a lot of corporate headquarters and whatnot.
Yeah.
And, you know, First National Bank is gone, and you know, who knows, it's been taken over by so many other things. Telephone company was out, you know, Standard Oil, you know, it just seems like we've lost a lot of people that wanted to just ensure the public the good things in Chicago, and they make it better. And they're behind the scenes. They're not making noise all the time. They're
right.
Quietly.
Civic
forward.
Leaders, yeah.
You got it.
You know what, though? Now, downtown looks like it's finished. I mean,
no.
Don't think so?
No,
okay.
Never.
You know, reassure me, Pat.
Well, you know, Chicago's taken it on the chin numerous times in the past.
Yeah, that's true.
We lost the stockyards.
Yes.
We lost the steel. When I first came on the job in 1970, there were four going steel mills. Matter of fact, my first night going to South Chicago District was 89th and Exchange, and I was going up 87th Street. And it was Christmas Eve, 1970, and the whole sky turned orange. I said, what's that? Holy smoke. The next thing I know, okay, that's the South Works. They were tapping the furnace.
Yeah.
They were making steel.
Happens every night.
But,
yeah.
You know, so we lost, you know, we've lost industries like that, but we've always come back and we got, you know.
Man, I hope
we get up off the mat and we do it again.
Yeah.
And
so
I think we're going to be fine on this.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not going to be fine. It's going to be a struggle. We'll win.
Yeah, good. I want the good guys to win, you know?
Always.
It's been a rough, rough, rough year, I can tell you that.
It has been.
And it just gets crazier and crazier. You know, when they get rid of Mr. Potato Head, I get concerned, you know? What the heck's going on here? All right, looking back, any high points? I bet you met a lot of interesting characters along the way, huh?
I did. You know, Hosni Mubarak, the president of Egypt.
Oh, yeah.
You know, met him up in the Conrad Hilton.
No kidding.
And you would meet a lot of other, of course, presidents at the time. I got with that green scarf I started wearing on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh, St. Patrick's Day, yeah.
George Bush was here for a St. Patrick's Day parade one year.
Yeah.
I've got a photograph with him in my green scarf.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been going on since then. But you get a picture. My last day I worked, I was a deputy chief of the Special Functions Group. And
what's that mean, Special Functions Group?
Well, that was basically the uniform resources of the department that weren't assigned to the districts.
Right.
We had the SWAT team. We had the targeted response.
Guys who float throughout the city.
Throughout the city, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, so they lied to you, of course. You know, good old Rom said he was going to put 1,000 coppers on the street.
Oh, I remember that.
And he was going to hire 1,000. But what he did was he took 600 police officers from these two units, and he put them back in the districts that they were working in anyway. He says, well, there's 600.
Yeah.
But they were already there.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So it was taking money out of your left pocket and putting it in your right pocket, and that was it.
He's a piece of crap. I'm sorry. Not a fan. I wrote a book about it. I'll get you a copy. Boy, the worst. That's when the city started going down the tubes. So you went through the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the aughts. What's the difference between being assigned a patrol division just as a lieutenant and then district commander? It's like a huge, is it a bit more responsibility?
Well, it definitely is a lot more responsibility. And what I found, it was relatively easy for me to become a commander because I had worked for 6 years prior to that in patrol administration. And I was writing the budgets.
Yeah.
And I was hiring civilian personnel and things of that nature and coordinating the evidence technicians who were assigned to the district at the time. And I was well aware of what a district commander has to reply and whatnot. So, you know, when questions were asked by, and, you know, so I knew how to answer the questions, you know, it was relatively easy transition for me to go right into being a district commander.
How many kids you got?
Three.
Oh, yeah.
I got my daughter, Maura.
Oh, Maura's here tonight.
Yeah, and then we've got Patrick, who's down in Atlanta with his three children. They're triplets.
Good. Yeah. He has triplets, yeah.
Just turned 15.
Wow.
And then we got Justin out in the Seattle area with little Henry, who's 4 years old. So
you're a cop, and you're bringing up, you got a young family. Yeah.
Yes.
And you're not home a lot, you know.
You know, I wasn't home a lot because I was, one of the greatest benefits of the Chicago Police Department is tuition reimbursement.
Oh, yeah.
So I was able to graduate from Northwestern.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You got all these degrees on here.
Yeah.
Holy cow.
I was able to graduate from Northwestern because of the tuition reimbursement.
Yeah.
And so that took time away.
Yeah.
And then you have your part-time job, of course. And then in addition to that...
Your side job? Yeah.
Always got side jobs.
Yeah.
And then you had the... you know, I was learning the pipes at the time.
Of course. Well, so you got a young family, you're doing all this stuff, and now you've been retired for since 2009. Looking back, it's a tough time to be a copper. What do you think about that?
I had the benefit that not everybody had a camera with them.
Yeah.
When they're out in the street,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And so it's just it was much easier, much more laid back at the time. And as I said, you would go and you're just trying to resolve the situation. Now that everything's recorded, there's certain things you might have taken a couple of shortcuts. But you know, it's
a good way of putting it. Yeah.
The problem would be, you know, now you recorded it and you can no longer do that.
No.
You know,
you got to wear those body cameras and all that stuff and
wear that. Well, which I think, you know, probably saves the coppers more than hurts them. Because it shows your side of the story. The problem might be, though, is we started having a problem with some of the state's attorneys down in the loop. You would have a problem with the shoplifters. And, you know, you would automatically upgrade it to a class 4 felony if they had a conviction for a theft or a robbery.
Something in their background.
And you would have difficulty because it's a felony, you would have to call the assistant state's attorney.
Felony review.
Isn't
it? Yeah.
And you would call them up, and they wouldn't want to approve it because it wasn't caught on video camera. Wait a minute, that's not a component, an element of the offense.
Yeah.
All you need to do is you're caught trying to exit the place by store security.
Yeah.
You know, and so they turned around and they okayed it, but our current state's attorney, I think, has stopped.
Don't get me started.
Yeah.
We had Pat O'Brien on the show a couple of times when he was running it. It's terrible what's going on. Yeah. And they're letting guys shoplifting. That's no big deal, you know, unless you steal a car or something. It's like, and now they're doing that all over this neighborhood now.
Well,
right?
You know, it's our own fault.
Okay.
I mean, society's fault.
Yeah.
You go back to the 70s, and the big problem was Saturday night specials. They were 22 caliber, 32 caliber, 38 caliber, six-shot revolvers. If you're lucky, if you got five shots off, you know, they jam, you know, they misfire and things of that nature. Well, first we stopped the manufacturer of them. So they imported the parts. You know, we stopped importing them. So they started bringing the parts in and they would assemble them here in the United States. They got around it that way, and then they stopped the importation of it. So all we did was we forced the thugs to buy good weapons.
Yeah.
Now they got Glocks and Smith & Wessons, yeah, 9mm
with
magazines that hold 15 rounds, no longer six. You know, a gunfight used to last 12 rounds, six from one guy and six from another. Now it's 15 here, 15 there, and they put another magazine in, and it's up to 30 piece. You know, we're doing the same thing now with the carjackings. You know, you need the fob in order, you know, every car has a, new cars have the fob.
To start it.
Start it. Yeah. And the car won't work without it.
Yeah.
So what else does a guy wants to steal a car? When you were a kid.
Hey, hotwire it.
Well, hotwire, punch a screwdriver into the ignition switch
and turn it.
Yeah. And you were there. Now you have to put a gun in a guy's ear and get his fob.
Yeah.
So, you know, we think we're doing right, but it turns around and burns you.
I'm glad you said that. I stopped with the fob stuff. You know what is funny? A friend of mine, Alamo, Duke Lynch, who I think you know, gave me a Chicago Police hat, a baseball cap. And my son just bought a new car, and it's a black SUV. And I said, maybe you should wear this because that's the car. Those are the things they're all carjacking. And he goes, ah, I don't need that. I said, well,
that doesn't stop you from being stuck up.
No.
I was 2000. Al Gore was in town.
Yeah.
It was a Saturday night. And I was coming home about 12:30 at night after a detail downtown.
Yeah.
Came home and I parked right on California and I saw this car coming up from north, coming south on California. And I'm getting out of my car and I'm going to my house and they jump out of the car. And they already got the guns up.
Wow.
One guy's
right
got
in front of your house.
Right in front. The other guy's got the hoodie up. They wanted to steal the squad car.
Honest to God.
Where's the keys to the car? So anyway, they reach in my pockets and they pull out. I carried my weapon in my briefcase, in a satchel. And when I saw the car stopping short, I started to go for the weapon. And then, but they already came out with the weapon. So I gave a toss of the briefcase into the bushes.
Yeah.
And so they didn't see that.
Uh-huh.
So when he reached in my pocket and he pulled out my star, I carried it loose.
Well,
and the district commander has a yellow metal, gold-colored star.
Yeah.
And he pokes the gun on my back. He says, "You the police?"
And I was trying to steal the squad car.
And I said, sorta.
Yeah.
But it was amazing, you know, how fast you get on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how fast you can say an act of contrition.
Oh, yeah.
So you lay it on the ground there, and they're going through it. One guy's saying, shoot him. Another guy says, get the car.
God.
Another guy says, let's get the hell out of here. And I voted with him.
Yeah.
So they left. But they didn't take the car.
They didn't take the car?
No. But I had it towed because they took the keys anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And they recovered my star later that night at 55th in Indiana.
No kidding.
Yeah. So
did they just toss it out the window?
They toss it. You know, don't want to get caught with it.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
So that was, you know, so I don't buy lottery tickets. I burned up a lot of my luck.
Yes. Now, just in the last week, two officers have committed suicide. And I mean, what's your take on that? And the young guys, too. It's very, very sad.
It is. It's a difficult job, as you mentioned earlier. It's more difficult now than ever before.
Yeah.
And, people, it happens.
Yeah.
You know, it's always happened. Terry Hiller, the former superintendent, was a big proponent of, you know, working with the officers. And we have, we have our employee
assistance programs. EIP. Yeah.
And things of that nature. We got our chaplain's unit.
Yeah, that breaks your heart.
But there's some folks that just doesn't work, and they get into the depression, and they're down that hole, and there's no coming out from it.
Yeah. And then there are other guys it doesn't affect at all. It's amazing.
Rolls up like water off a duck's back.
Yeah,
They go. You know, I was, speaking of the chaplain's unit and whatnot, I was president of the St. Jude Police League for the last 4 years, 5 years of my career, too. And I was one of the guys who we did the, we moved the Memorial March from Michigan Avenue. We used to march into when I first was on the job, we used to march into St. Peter's.
St. Peter's Church?
Church.
On Madison.
On Madison Street. And we'd fill up the entire church, both balconies and the beer balcony.
Yeah.
And but things have changed over the years. Now we were going to we would line up on Michigan Avenue, and you go down Chicago Avenue and turn for the cathedral. You would go to the cathedral.
Holy Name Cathedral.
Yes. Yeah. And so when we got there, things had changed. The department was no longer primarily Catholic.
Yeah.
Even the Catholics, you know, just in general, population was no longer going to church routinely.
Yeah.
So you would end up in the church with maybe 35 officers instead of filling up.
Yeah.
So when I was thinking, you know, maybe we should stop this.
Yeah.
And but as it turned out, we kept it up.
Good for you.
We moved it to when Phil Klein was the superintendent.
Yeah.
To museum campus.
Oh yeah.
Now we line up on Solidarity Drive and we marked past the police memorial, which is the appropriate place.
Yeah.
A lot of folks complained about it, saying you're trying to hide us behind Soldiers Field, but actually, what more appropriate place is there to have a memorial marked?
Well, that's a great shot of the city and everything, too. Then by the planetarium and
past
the aquarium.
Police memorial right behind Soldiers Field.
Yeah.
So we did that, and it's still successful. Of course, I don't think that we had it last year. Probably won't have it this year. It's usually the first Sunday in May.
Oh,
the
is
police
it?
Memorial
yeah,
march.
Yeah, yeah. A friend of mine, his father was a police. Do you remember Junior Barrett?
Yes.
All right, Ricky Barrett was very instrumental in discovering that the first officer, first fallen, was actually an Irish guy named Constable James Quinn. And there was another guy before that, but he fought like crazy to get him on that wall, you know, the memorial wall, Constable Quinn. And I'm proud of that. And the Irish have a great history in the police. You know,
we do. We go back to, in the turn of the century, the 1900s, the superintendent of police was Francis O'Neill.
Yeah, Chief O'Neill.
Chief O'Neill.
Yeah.
And I was lucky enough to represent the Chicago Police Department in 1999 when they opened up Chief O'Neill's hotel in Dublin, Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
My wife went over to Ireland.
You were like an envoy or emissary.
Right. I brought over, they wanted to have a representative from the Chicago Police Department during this grand opening ceremony.
Cool.
And what the good thing was, I ran into a fellow by the name of John Gleason. He was professor of Irish studies up at University of Wisconsin, Madison. No, Milwaukee. My sister lives up there.
Yeah.
And he would ask me, are you Marianne's brother? And I said, man, I'm in Ireland.
I know that guy, Johnny Gleason. Yeah, yeah.
I said, am I glad I'm here with my wife?
Yeah.
Could you imagine being in the middle of Ireland and then they're asking you, you know your sister? So,
well, you know, you go to Ireland, it's like, you look around and you go, is this the South Side? Because everybody looks familiar.
Almost like going to Fort Myers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But we were there, and during the ceremony, I got to meet a fellow who was the vice president in charge of marketing. And he says, where are you leaving from?
For the hotel. Yeah.
Well, for Aer Lingus.
Oh, wow.
For Aer Lingus. He says, where are you leaving from? And he says, Shannon, on such and such a date. So when I walked into the airport, they're paging my name. I said, what happened? Go up there. You've been bumped up to first class.
Oh, nice.
Oh, whoa. That's the only way to fly.
Yeah.
That was great.
That must have been a great trip, huh?
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
Got to go to the house my father was born in.
No kidding.
And an interesting story is my grandparents, my on McNulty side. My grandmother was over here. She was a domestic in the Drexel household.
Oh, wow.
In Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And my grandfather, who had been over here in Montana, Deer Lodge, Montana, the copper mines, and he went back to Ireland. He's coming back, so they gave him a package because they were from the same town, but he was a little bit older, but he knew her.
Yeah.
So he ends up in Philadelphia, delivered a package, and they went to a dance that night.
Yeah.
And then they started corresponding back and forth. So he proposed via the mail.
No kidding.
And they met back in Ireland. She says, okay, we'll meet you in Ireland. So my grandma quit her job and Philadelphia. He quit his job in Montana. They went in Ireland, got married. opened a store and went broke.
Oh,
but in the meantime, my father was born.
Oh,
so they 1911, they come back and they land in Chicago.
Yeah, that's great.
And
yeah.
they lived at 7218 Honorary, after a couple initial moves.
Well, that's where you were born, right?
That's where I was raised. And then my mother was raised 7218 Wood, half a block
right
away.
Down the street,
right across the street. So, you know, it was kind of rough growing up in that neighborhood because my mother was one of 12. My father was one of 4. So when you're walking down the street, people would know you, know your uncle.
Or
if they didn't know you or your uncles, they knew they knew the guy you were walking with. So you had to walk the other side of Damon to light up a cigarette.
Your dad, was he a cop? Or
he was a plasterer.
Oh, okay.
He was a plasterer.
So it was your brother who got you to go into the police, huh?
I followed my brother my whole life. He went to St. Justin's, I went to St. Justin's. He went to De La Salle, I went to De La Salle. He went to Loop Junior College, I went to Loop Junior
kidding, College. Yeah.
Then he became a police officer, so I said, that's a good job. So I went
what's his name?
Morris.
Morris McNulty.
Yes. There was a photograph of him in the Sun-Times when he was at Gus Casey. He initially had a barbershop at 70th and Damon, and he cut my father's hair, who was Morris McNulty. He cut my brother's hair, who was Morris McNulty. He cut my brother's son's hair, who was Morris McNulty.
No kidding.
And then when young Maury had a child, another Morris McNulty. So they wanted to make a deal about, you know, cutting four or five Morris McNulty's heads,
whatever it was.
So that was a good story.
Where's that barbershop?
He's gone now. Well, he's gone from barbering.
He
was initially, he moved from 70th and Damon to, he went for a while on Western Avenue, and then he ended up at 95th Street, 95th and Holman, and then 95th and Kedzie.
Okay.
And then he moved out to his area, retired. Gus Casey. Good.
Gus Casey the barber.
Yeah. You know, I had gone to him since sixth grade and up until just a couple of years ago.
No kidding. Well,
yeah. And when I sat down after he retired and quit, the guy says, how you want your hair? I says, I don't know.
Yeah.
Last time I said, just be a boy's regular haircut.
Yeah.
So maybe I just dropped it to a men's regular haircut. So that was it.
All right. Well, we honor you. We admire you, Pat, and proud of your career. God bless you. Thanks for coming on the show. Come back sometime and tell us some more stories, will you?
Will do.
All right, buddy. God bless you. Thank you so much.
All right.
We're going to be right back after these messages from our friends on Hibernian Radio.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Stick around, everybody. Charlie Houlihan here, and if you're looking to hear more stories of Irish first responders, cops, firefighters, and paramedics, then you're in the right place. Tell your friends to tune into HibernianRadio.org and tell them Charlie sent you.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
On the death walk of saloons that decorate Western Avenue, only the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, the soul of Beverly, sits right on a 50-yard line of Chicago's Southside Irish St. Patrick's Day Parade at 106th and Western. Generations of Southside Irish have quenched their thirst in the Cork, snuggling up to memories of family, faith, and fierce loyalty to friends. It's the jewel of this neighborhood where we celebrated weddings, christenings, wakes, and unforgettable victories. Proprietors Bill Guidy and Mike Fitzpatrick, now celebrating 20 years in business, welcome you home for a cold brew, to share a good story, or help you throw one hell of a party.
With over 20 beers on tap and a full bar for your pleasure, this is the spot you can sink a root and get your Irish on. Cork has plenty of seating, from our private event rooms to our 300-person beer garden. Our interior space brings you back to the homeland of Ireland with our vintage photos and authentic Irish decor and Chicago memories of the good old days. So say hello to a stranger, make a new friend, fall in love, or just enjoy the company of people you forgot you knew. The Cork and Kerry continues the Southside tradition parents and grandparents brought here from the old country. Come on by the Cork and Kerry and get some. The Cork and Kerry Irish Pub, 10614 Southwestern Avenue, for private parties, just pals hanging out, or intimate cocktail rendezvous. Come on home to the south side of Chicago at the Cork and Kerry.
And we are back on Hibernian Radio. Hey, thanks to Pat McNulty. He was terrific. Put the guy, you know what? When we sent out that email, I looked at Pat's bio. That's longer than your arm, and I said, what's the key to get these people to open this email blast? And I came up with, who are you going to call? This is the guy you call when you want to know what the Chicago Police Force. Who are you going to call? Pat McNulty. And speaking of Pat McNulty, I want to remind everybody, the Emerald Society of Illinois, you can get your Paddy's Day stuff now. Better get it real fast. Because they have hats, sweatshirts, all that stuff, jackets. EmeraldSocietyOfIllinois.org. Go to their website, order your Paddy's Day stuff now, and you'll be doing good for the Emerald Society, which is terrific for all the Irish American police officers all over the state. EmeraldSocietyOfIllinois.org. Order your Paddy's Day stuff now. Now, Billy, you know, whenever I'm walking down Western Avenue and look at the window, Ken's, Ronk's, Hart's, Cork and Kerry, all those great Irish saloons, and I see the ghost of my old pal Jimmy Goff through the misty. He says to me, "Hey, Holy, who died?" Michael C. O'Donnell, 94, a native of Brusna, Roscommon County, Ireland, retired Chicago Fire Department and the Army veteran, is a loving husband of the late Patricia, and the beloved father of Thomas and the late Joseph, God rest his soul, Mike O'Donnell, 94. Also, Sean O'Reilly, 43, only 43. Sean was born on January 6th in Oak Lawn to Francie and John O'Reilly, both of County Mayo, Ireland. He grew up in Tinley Park, 1996 graduate of Marian Catholic High School. He graduated magna cum laude from Marquette in 2000. Worked for the federal government for 20 years. He served as supervisory officer within the Department of Homeland Security since 2011. He was also a Eucharistic minister at Old St. Mary's and previously served as a member of the parish council. Sean's most important role is being a good spouse to his wife, Shannon, as well as being a good father to their children, son, Eamon, and twin girls, Madeline and Vivian. He leaves behind a host of aunts, uncles, and cousins in Ireland and in the States, a family of his heart, and countless friends. God rest his lovely soul, Sean O'Reilly. And finally, Pat McGuire, beloved husband of the late Patricia A. Craig, loving father of Patrick and Melissa. He was a proud uncle of many nieces and nephews, both here in the States and back home in Ireland. And Pat was waked at Sheehy's, where all the right people go. So we can close up the crypt. Oh, I forgot the most important. A big loss just happened. Actually, I just got the news this afternoon. An old friend of mine and a great Southside Irishman, Richard Driehaus. His mother was a Ray. And he owned Gilhooly's Bar over 103rd in Central Park. But Richard was a St. Ignatius guy, a couple of years older than me. He died, cerebral hemorrhage, just yesterday or today, I think, and was probably the richest Irish American in the world, maybe. Just an incredible guy and a stock picker. He was a kid. He had a route for the South Town. He told me, I wrote about him in the Sun Times. He put money in one of my plays, and of course he lost it. But God bless him, he kept coming back. You know, he was like a masochist that way. Just a terrific guy. Fortunately, I figured out how to get him a tax deduction every time after that. But Richard was so good to us and our family, and you know, it's going to be tough without him because he was our go-to guy. Richard Tree, he went to St. Margaret of Scotland. He gave them $1 million. He gave $1 million to Old St. Pat's Church when they needed it, when they needed new stained glass windows and everything. He's given tons of money to St. Ignatius. Just a generous guy and a proud Irish American from the south side of Chicago, proud to be a St. Margaret's guy. We're going to miss him. And it's such a shock. Just want to say a prayer for Richard. He's in heaven, I'm sure of that. I can tell you that because the guy did nothing but give, you know. He gave his time, his energy, and most importantly, his money. And he had a lot of it. But he was smart, very smart guy. When he used to tell the story of, he was a kid, he had a route to South Town, and I think he got 50 cents a week or something like that, and he started getting tips at Christmas. You know, Mrs. Walsh would give him 50 cents, and Mrs. Burke would give him, and he got a little kitty, and he bought stocks. He figured it out. He figured it out at the age of like 12, and that became his career, and he was just a wunderkind on the stock market. He now has Driehaus Capital Management, the Driehaus Foundation, all this stuff. He owns two hotels that he bought in Ireland. Patty and I, oh, I'll tell you a funny story. My son Patty and I went to see him in September. Now, you know, we have a not-for-profit organization where we produce the radio shows. We have a film festival. We do films and plays and stuff like that. So we're always looking for dough, people to donate. So we went to see him, and Kathy Rogers, his executive assistant, invited us. Would you guys like to come to the house? I said, yeah, because of COVID and everything. We were invited to come to the house, and Patty was out in the car, and I said, you know, my son is here. We'd like to get a picture before we go of the three of us together. Sure. So I call Patty on the phone, and Patty comes into Driehaus's mansion. And we're setting up the shot, and his secretary is taking the picture, and I said, get a shot of me putting my hand in Richard's pocket. He laughed harder than anybody, God bless him, because he got it. He still had a South Side edge. So God rest his lovely soul. We're sure going to miss him. And so say a prayer for Richard Driehaus. He's just a terrific, terrific guy. Okay, now we can close up the crypt. And Richard, that one's for... a funny thing. I was on Rick Kogan's show Sunday talking about the party we're going to have and the film we're doing, and Our Irish Pub is going to be on TV Saturday, March 13th at noon and 12:30, and then it's going to be on WTTW on Wednesday night, St. Patrick's Day at 10 p.m. And who financed it? Richard Driehaus. God bless him. Every year we did the film festival, he was there. So anyway, I'm on Kogan's show, and he's interviewing me, and I had written it down. Plug Driehaus, thank him. And I had sent over, Monday morning, I sent over the clip to his office. And then today we get that news. I went, I hope he didn't read that and go, oh, my God, he mentioned my name again. Anyway, God rest his soul. God rest his lovely soul, Richard Driehaus. All right, we're going to take another break here on Hibernian Radio. I'll be right back after these messages from our friends. With a history going all the way back to 1896, the International Union of Operating Engineers has continued to protect workers and their families with loyalty and brotherhood. Local 150 has continued to thrive through economic booms and busts with careful training and aggressive organizing. Under the leadership of President and Business Manager Jim Sweeney, Local 150 has implemented programs and action plans to create work, protect benefits, and keep members working. And they've been helping the Irish-American community of Chicagoland for just as long. The Hibernian Radio Show is proud to be associated with Jim Sweeney and Local 150, and we salute the continuing efforts of the International Union of Operating Engineers and their support of Irish and Irish-American families now and in the future. Thanks to Local 150.
your family has suffered a loss, there's one family I know who will be there for you. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes are third generation, family owned and operated. The Sheehy family has dedicated their lives serving families throughout Chicago and the southwest suburbs. The Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Home was incorporated in 1913 as a storefront at 76th and Halsted in Chicago. At the time, this was one of the few standalone funeral homes of its kind and was to be the first of many to come bearing the Sheehy name. The founder, Roger Sheehy Sr., was soon joined in business by his three sons, Roger Jr., Jack, and Bob. This trademark of service is evident 98 years later, as Bob and Jim Sheehy, third generation, own and operate two locations in Orland Park and Burbank. At Sheehy's, the name on their sign outside the funeral home means something. For them, it's very important that everyone be treated as if they were family, friend, or neighbor, as they very well could be. When my brother Willie died a few years ago, the Sheehys took very good care of our family. And you know, you never forget something like that. Their entire staff cares about each and every family they serve. Every detail is handled in a professional and personal manner. On a daily basis, the directors Bill Kiley, Mike LaRocque, and John Sullivan, and the rest of the staff, take great pride in their work, serving families as if they were their own. Bob Sheehy will tell you, we pride ourselves on offering the highest level of professionalism with every family we serve. Robert J. Sheehy & Sons Funeral Homes, here for you since 1913.
Irish American News has been bringing you the news important to the Irish in Chicagoland for over 40 years. If you like mostly good news and information from all aspects of the Irish community, check out Irish American News. To advertise or subscribe, call our friend Cliff Carlson at 847-872-0700 or email him at cliff@irishamericannews.com. Irish American News, we've always been green.
Hey folks, Charlotte Houlihan here. Did you know that Hibernian Radio is now streaming worldwide on Global Irish Radio? Every Saturday night at 7 p.m. or 1 a.m. in Ireland. Yes, the Irish are always way ahead of us. Check it out at globalirishradio.com or capital GIR.ie.
Southsiders have always known where to get the best pizza on earth, Fox's Pizza. For over a half century, the Fox family has been creating that delicious thin crust za that your mouth will tell you, this can only be Fox's. It's a Chicago Beverly institution at 99th and Western, as well as in Orland Park, where they combine delicious food with an Irish pub ambiance. You got the best of both worlds. Still owned by Tom and Frank Fox, whose mom and dad, Frank and Teresa, bought the Western location from Al Capone's sister back in 1964. They opened the doors in Orland at 73 at 143rd and Ravinia Avenue. You'll recognize the stone turrets of their Irish castle, whose great times have been celebrated for generations of Chicagoland Irish. Fox's is perfect for the whole family, pickup or delivery, or you can dine in, relax, and have a cocktail with your dinner. Whether it's steak, ribs, chicken, or especially pizza, it's all good. Having a party? Fox's also does catering. Call Fox's in Beverly at 773-239-3212 or in Orland Park at 708-349-2111. They're proud sponsors of Hibernian Radio and all Irish first responders. Mention this show for a free toothpick. Gotta love that Fox's Pizza.
Flood Brothers Disposal was started over 90 years ago by their grandfather. With more than 20 family members still involved with day-to-day operations, the Floods are service-oriented and believe that the right way is the only way to do something. Flood Brothers are price competitive and still offer the personal touch in an industry-trending corporate. For client-centric service without all of that corporate garbage, call Flood Brothers today for a quote on your solid waste, recycling, and yard waste collection services. Call Bob Flood today at 630-261-0400 or go online at floodbrothersdisposal.com. Welcome back to the Flood Brothers.
Hi, everybody. Your old friend Mike Houlihan back here on Hibernian Radio, and we're honored, very honored, to have my granddaughter Charlotte Houlihan is in the house, and she has a very important announcement to make. What do you got, Charlotte?
Hibernian Radio celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's on Wednesday, March 17th at the Cork and Kerry Irish Pub.
That's next Wednesday.
Yep. At 106 14th Street on Western Avenue starting at 7 p.m. The broadcast recording will feature Rick Barrett, former DEA agent and history detective. Telling the story of Constable James Quinn, an Irishman and the first Chicago Public Police Department officer to die in the line of duty.
God rest his soul. Yes. What else?
Music from the Great Whiskey Project, Iris Janser. Tagif Spillane.
Tag Spillane. He's terrific.
Tag Spillane. As well as surprise guest Jimmy
Jimmy Clunan, the one and only.
And friends.
And Jimmy Conway.
Yeah. Jimmy Conway and other musicians dropping in by until 10 p.m.
At which time? We turn on the TVs. Channel 11 is going to be playing Our Irish Pub. Did you know that?
No, it's very interesting.
Yeah, that's the capper for the party. Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody. Partygoers will enjoy the WTTW rebroadcast of Our Irish Pub, featuring Irish fiddler Katie Grennan and some of Chicago's most celebrated and talented Irish musicians.
Thank you, Charlotte, for that newsflash. You'll be at the party too, won't you?
Of course.
All right. I think you're going to be selling raffle tickets. We're not selling them. We're giving them away. Yeah. But if somebody wants to make a drop, we'd love that too. Okay. All right. Thank you, Charlotte. Now I want to tell a quick story about the garage door. Actually, our old pal Tim Burns sent me this, and I thank him because these are just gold. Gold, Tim. The boss walked into his office one morning not knowing his zipper was down and his fly area was wide open. His assistant walked up to him and said, "This morning when you left your house, did you close your garage door?" The boss told her he knew he'd closed the garage door and walked into his office, puzzled by the question. As he finished his paperwork, he suddenly noticed his fly was open and zipped it up. He then understood her question about his garage door. He headed out for a cup of coffee and paused by her desk to ask, "You know, when my garage door was open, did you see my Jaguar parked in there?" She smiled and said, "No, I didn't. All I saw was an old minivan with two flat tires." Okay. Two elderly gentlemen from a retirement center were sitting on a bench under a tree when one turns to the other and says, "Slim, I'm 83 years old now and I'm just full of aches and pains. I know you're about my age. How do you feel?" Slim says, "I feel just like a newborn baby." "Really? Like a newborn baby?" "Yep. No hair, no teeth, and I think I just crapped my pants." Okay. A senior citizen said to his 80-year-old buddy, "So I hear you're getting married." "Yep." "Do I know her?" "Nope." "This woman, she good looking?" "Not really." "She good cook?" "Nah, she can't cook too well." "Does she have lots of money?" "Nope." "Poor as a church mouse." "Well, then is she good in bed?" "I don't know." "Well, why in the world do you want to marry her?" "Because she can still drive at night." Boy, I know what that's like. Okay. I got one more. Three old guys are out walking. First one says, "Windy, isn't it?" Second guy says, "No, it's Thursday." Third guy says, "So am I. Let's go get a beer." Okay. Hey, don't forget the party. Please come to the party. You're going to have a blast. Next Wednesday, we're raffling off some Patty's Irish Whiskey. We also have a great hockey jersey from Jonathan Taves. Is that how you say it? It's green. It's just terrific. And we got all kinds of Patty's Irish Whiskey we're going to give away. So come on down and have a blast. Two great bands, and we're going to have a blast. And we'll be celebrating St. Patrick's Day right here at the Cork and Kerry next Wednesday night, March 17th. Thanks so much. God bless you all, and we'll see you later. Bye.